This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Canada's transgender community, after lengthy struggles with discrimination and bureaucratic obstacles, is now celebrating a series of significant victories. Montreal's Concordia University has become the second university in the country to allow transgender students to use their chosen name in class and not on their and on their identification. Additionally, Passport Canada is considering making passports genderless. And with considerable media attention, Jenna Talikova was given permission to compete in the Miss Universe Canada competition held in Toronto. More recently, the re-elected Progressive Conservative government in Alberta reversed an earlier policy that had delisted sex change operations in the province. And on Wednesday, June 13th, the province of Ontario's Human Rights Code was updated to extend protections to transgendered people. The province of Manitoba is expected to do the same within days. We're joined on the phone by Aaron DeVore, a professor of sociology at the University of Victoria.
Welcome to People First Radio, Aaron.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. Help us to put these recent events into a larger perspective. Does, for example, the inclusion of Jenna Talikova in the Miss Universe Canada competition constitute a success or a milestone for transgendered Canadians?
Well, I would say it actually constitutes a success or a milestone for all Canadians. This is really a human rights issue, and Ms. Talikova has every right to participate in this pageant, assuming that she's beautiful enough, as any other woman.
Tell us more about why it's important, for example, that Passport Canada consider issuing genderless passports.
Well, there's a lot of people, an increasing number of people in Canada today who don't feel that they fit just exactly right in the two standard gender categories. And there's now a law that says that you have to match the gender appearance to the designation on your passport or you can't get on an airplane and travel. And so unless we have a way to designate gender that matches the appearance of individuals, there's a large swath of society that will not be allowed to travel. And so there are those people who change their gender, and during the process of changing gender, they are not clearly either male or female in their expression. And there's also an increasing number of people who prefer to not fit clearly into the two standard gender categories, and there's no reason why they should have to.
Now, speaking about identification or identification papers or cards, Concordia University joined the University of Toronto as being the only two universities, I understand, in Canada, and allowing transgender students to identify themselves using their chosen names. Tell us more about the importance of that to transgender students.
Well, to start off, I'd like to point out that my own university, University of Victoria, has long allowed any student, transgender or otherwise, to choose the name they would prefer to be identified by in their class lists. There are a lot of people, for a lot of reasons, not just transgender students, who prefer not to use their legal names. And this is simply a matter of respect for people's wishes. Legal names are assigned to people at a particular point in their lives, and they don't always like them as time goes on for reasons of gender and otherwise. And there's no reason why a legal name can't be kept on record somewhere, but for all everyday purposes, a person should be allowed to identify themselves according to a name that suits them.
Now, I just learned, at least this morning, that Ontario's Human Rights Code was updated for the first time, apparently since the 1980s, to extend protections to transgendered people, something which the province of Manitoba is also expected to do today or perhaps tomorrow. Now, I'm just reading here from the Winnipeg Free Press article. It says, members of all three parties in Ontario's legislature voted to amend the code to add the terms gender identity and gender expression to prevent discrimination against transgendered people. Tell us more about the concept of gender identity and gender expression.
Well, this is a very important milestone, because until this law has been changed, it's entirely possible for someone to discriminate in employment, in housing, in a variety of ways in society, simply on the basis of the fact that they don't like the way a person looks. What it comes down to is the gender expression part is equally as important as gender identity. And so if I wanted to discriminate against someone on the basis of their race, that would be illegal. It's something I can look at. I can say, I don't like the way you look, and I'm going to discriminate against you. That's illegal on the basis of race. However, if I look at someone and say, I don't like the way you dress, it's not appropriate for a man to dress like that. I don't like the way you dress. Women should look such and such a way, and it says here on your identification that you're female. And I'm not going to hire you or let you live in this apartment, or I'm going to fire you from this job. That's been legal up until now. And that doesn't seem consistent with the values of Canadians, and I'm very pleased to hear that the laws are starting to change on that account.
People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and the issues related to health and wellness. Coming to you on CHOY 101.7 FM and streaming at CHOY.ca.
Research indicates that GLBT people's health status is often substantially poorer than that of the average Canadian, with higher rates of suicide, depression, mental illness, substance abuse, and HIV. Transsexual transgender persons can face a myriad of health-related issues. Stigma and discrimination can affect even the most basic healthcare visits, and the fear of this stigma can make trans persons less willing to access healthcare. A series of small but significant victories have occurred, which may positively impact transgender Canadians. We're speaking with Dr. Aaron DeVore, a professor of sociology at University of Victoria.
Dr. DeVore, the re-elected Progressive Conservative government in Alberta has just reversed an earlier policy that had delisted sex change operations in the province. How can actions such as denying transgender persons medical care be reconciled with human rights legislation and human rights codes?
Well, I think possibly the reason they've decided to reverse their policy on that is because it's extremely difficult to reconcile it with human rights legislation and human rights codes. Transgendered people require these medical interventions. It's not a matter of frivolous choice. It's for transgender people, this is a matter of being able to live a healthy life. Research shows that the health outcomes, health status, the kind of information that Ashley was just mentioning, improves when a gender identity issue is treated appropriately. And for those that require this kind of medical intervention, this is a basic health issue.
Josiah McDonald is a transgender man living in Nova Scotia. He recently underwent a medically necessary hysterectomy. It was recommended by his doctor, but the province refused to pay for it. So Josiah was billed $3,400. He's launched a human rights complaint. Josiah told the Chronicle Herald, quote, "Someone somewhere along the way made the assumption that because I was transgender, it was my choice to have the hysterectomy, and therefore it would be part of my reassignment." Tell us more about the medical challenges that transgender Canadians still face.
Well, the transgender Canadians face medical challenges not only associated with gender change issues, but associated with just getting basic medical care and basic health care, because most of our physicians get little or no training at all in how to address issues that arise for transgender people that are specific to their transgenderism. And then in addition to that, there's a lot of assumptions that everything that a transgender person needs or needs done medically is somehow related to the fact that they're transgender. And I don't know the details of this case, but from what you've just told us, it sounds as though the physician recommended this for reasons that were independent of the fact that Josiah was transgendered, and yet the people who had to approve the cost made the assumption that it was related. And that's a common thing that happens to transgender people. Whatever the issue is, there's always a question, well, this must be because you're on hormones, or this must be because of your gender identity. And that's not necessarily the case. It's important to be able to recognize that transgender people are complete human beings, and they are more than simply transgendered.
You write in one of your publications that sex, gender, and sexuality are best understood as three distinct but related phenomena. Tell us more about that and how it impacts this struggle for transgender rights and recognition.
Well, first, I think I have to say, what do I mean by sex, gender, and sexuality? Because many people's minds, the point I'm trying to make is, in many people's minds, the physical body and the gender identity, that is, the way that the person lives and feels about themselves in society, are not necessarily always matched up. And then we come to the transgender people, which they're born into a particular body, but they feel themselves to be a person that doesn't match. A male person with a male body feels themselves to be a woman. And that gender, the feeling of being a woman, is extremely strong and is much stronger indicator than the physical birth sex. Most people in everyday life, those two things match up, and you don't have to make that distinction. But it's almost impossible to understand the concept of transgender or what it feels like to be transgendered unless you can recognize and accept that those two things do not have to always match up. And then furthermore, sexuality, there's a common thought that, transgender people, they're just doing that because they're actually gay. It's really about their sexuality, and they just want to legitimize being attracted to people of the same sex as the one they were born to. Well, again, those things don't necessarily go together at all. A transgender person may be attracted to the type of person that was the same as who they were born as. It may be attracted to the other. In other words, when someone changes their gender, their sexuality may stay the same. It may change. They're entirely different categories that frequently line up as expected: female body, a gender of a woman attracted to men. That's kind of the standard way that people expect it. But those three can match up in any combination. They don't have to go together that way.
Dr. DeVore, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. It was much appreciated.
My pleasure.
Aaron DeVore is a professor of sociology at University of Victoria. Dr. DeVore studies the social construction of sex, gender, and sexuality using a grounded theory approach. His current work examines the role of philanthropist Reed Erickson in the development of North American social movements for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender support and acceptance.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.